Bickley and Murata mornings from 6 to 10.
Bickley and Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
The world.
Dan Bickley.
Sports, man. Sports.
Vince Murata.
It's a power-packed morning zoo. Are you kidding me?
Bickley and Murata.
Spectacular.
This is the greatest show.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show. This is the greatest show in the history of radio.
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning. Welcome, everybody. Happy Thursday. I think in the valley as we slog through one of the longest weeks I can remember.
Good. It's not only me that feels that way.
Oh, this is one of the longest weeks I can ever remember.
It's good to know that I'm not alone.
No, you're not alone. And there's a lot of reasons for that.
This is our 13th show this week.
It feels like it, doesn't it? So I am getting the interior of my house painted right now. Okay. So I've never had this done. And the crew that's doing it, they're a great crew of dudes. They covered everything in plastic yesterday.
Yeah.
Me being incapable of planning ahead. Had quite an issue this morning waking up realizing, okay, none of the overhead light bulbs are actually in, so it's completely dark in the house. All my clothes are behind this tarp in a closet. I don't know where my toothbrush is. Oh, and by the way, where are my keys?
Oh, no.
And I'm walking around a dark house full of nothing but plastic covering everywhere going, I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot.
Your toothbrush and keys were behind the plastic?
Somewhere, yes. The whole house is encased in plastic.
So that explains the outfit today.
It was it does. No, it does. You're right about that. It does. I don't wear t-shirts to work because it's generally 30 degrees in this studio.
That is true. Mm-hmm. That is true.
I'm glad I'm not the only
one. What a long week this has been. I'm not sure I've had a basketball game or a team affect me like this in a long time. I could not keep watching that game last night just out of nausea.
Yeah, I went through the process yesterday because I had set up the DVR. Even going back to last year, I have all of last year's playoff games still on the DVR. And I thought about it, finally getting to the point where I have to rewatch Game 7 from a different vantage point than I had during the game on Sunday, and I accidentally deleted it.
Oh.
And then I thought, all right, you know what,
that's not such a bad thing. That's a divine intervention right there.
I don't know if I want to conjure up those feelings of anxiety again, so maybe.
But you're being protected from yourself.
I think so. Somebody's looking out for me.
Yeah, my issue is that game has been playing repeatedly in my head since it ended.
I'm with you, Bick. I've never, ever, Super Bowl loss, anything. I've never been affected like a single loss like this. It finally is starting to wear off a little bit.
Okay,
but, yeah,
good. I'm happy for you. This really turned out to be about the most Phoenix thing ever.
Yeah.
And what's so painful and ironic about it is we were looking at this team to deliver us from all of those so Phoenix moments.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us the ultimate one instead. All right.
It's a cherry on a really, really bad Sunday.
Exactly. We have young Lauren running the board this morning. Yeah. Off to a much better start than Jared. Lauren, start the show.
Right button splash, and everything.
Splash. Look at that.
The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash. Cannonball.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Yeah, we start the Splash for Thursday, May 19th. Suns GM James Jones had his year-end chat with the media and his weekly visit with Burns and Gambo yesterday here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. He addressed the DeAndre Ayton question with Burns and Gambo, saying, quote, DeAndre had an amazing season. He's progressed every year and improved every year. He's been here, so he's a big part of what we do. His future with us is something we will address at the proper time, which is in the future. He's a free agent, and I've said all along, he's about the same things we're about, which is winning. We'll address it at the proper time. Yes,
yeah.
Ayton will be a restricted free agent this summer, and he was benched in Game 7, the loss to Dallas on Sunday in the Western Conference semis.
Now, if you balance what James Jones said with what Flex from Jersey said a day before, you'll notice quite a difference.
Yes.
Meaning the Suns have anticipated this day for months. They've planned for this day. they've got a plan in place going forward. I hope it's a good plan. Because it's one thing to say we're going to match an offer, but it's another thing to keep a guy who doesn't want to be there. And that's going to be a tricky thing to figure
Remember
out.
Remember the last player that didn't want to be here?
Yeah.
They dealt with that one pretty quickly.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Yes, they did.
Speaking of Dallas, they got blown out 112-87 in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals by the Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry led the Warriors with 21 points. Six other Golden State players were in double figures. Dallas's red-hot shooting from three-point range wasn't there in Game 1. They hit just 23% from behind the arc, and Luka did not look like Luka last night. He had more turnovers than baskets.
And again, I had the game on. It was in front of me. I just could not engage with it. It was just, the Suns should have been one of those two teams on that screen. The Suns team, I remember, is better than either of those teams I saw last night.
I agree. But did you find yourself really rooting for, like, bloodshed?
No.
Just like a total rout? Because I was. And I can't stand Golden State either. Tonight it's Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals in Miami. Heat leading Boston 1-0. Celtics should get guard Marcus Smart back after he missed the opener with a foot injury. Center Al Horford doubtful to play. He remains in the league's health and safety protocols. That game tips off at 5:30. ESPN has the television coverage. The Kia All-NBA rookie teams were announced yesterday. Scotty Barnes of Toronto, Detroit's Cade Cunningham, Cleveland's Evan Mobley were all unanimous choices. They were joined by Orlando's Franz Wagner and Houston's Jalen Green on the first team.
Mm.
D-backs swept in L.A.
Yeah.
Dodgers complete the sweep with a 5-3 win yesterday afternoon. For the fourth straight game, the D-backs had a lead up 2-1 in the fourth. Dodgers struck for four runs, highlighted by a three-run homer by Justin Turner, who just absolutely murders the D-backs.
Isn't it crazy?
Ugh. Yeah. And it seems like he has for 20 years. D-backs had a bases loaded, nobody out situation in the fifth, but came up empty. They've dropped six in a row. They're now 18-21. And they head to Chicago for a four-game series with the Cubs.
The Cubs.
Starting tonight, Zach Gallen on the mound against Marcus Stroman in the opener. 4:40 first pitch, 4 o'clock pregame on ESPN, 6:20 a.m. and 98.7 FM HD2. I think it's like 3-24 now in their last 27
right.
games at Dodger Stadium.
Right.
Ooh. D-backs
not
also made,
good.
They made a trade yesterday. They picked up left-handed reliever Paul Fry, from the Baltimore Orioles in exchange for right-handed pitcher Luis Osorio. Fry has pitched in 187 games out of the Baltimore bullpen since 2018. He was immediately optioned to AAA Reno following the trade. Cardinals signed another one of their draft picks, inking third-round pass rusher Myjai Sanders out of Cincinnati to a four-year deal on Wednesday. Seven of the eight Cardinals draft picks have been signed. Only third-rounder Cameron Thomas remains unsigned. The NCAA Division I Football Council announced yesterday that it will relax restrictions on conference championship games, allowing conferences to determine the teams that would participate in their respective title game. Minutes later, the Pac-12 announced that starting this season, the conference championship game would feature the teams with the two best records regardless of geography or division. If that were the case in the 11 years of the Pac-12 championship game as opposed to the division champions meeting, five of those matchups would have been different.
Isn't that weird?
It is.
Yeah.
So division's going bye-bye in college football is basically
right.
What
that's basically what's going on.
Which
yep.
I'm fine with.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. PGA Championship gets started this morning at Southern Hills in Tulsa. Some big names are not there. Defending champion Phil Mickelson, of course, pulled out of the tournament last weekend. He's played in only four PGA events this season, the last being the Farmers Insurance Open in late January. He drew the ire of many in the golf world for his outspoken criticism of the PGA Tour and his involvement in the Saudi-backed LIV Golf Invitational. And then Bryson DeChambeau withdrew from the tournament yesterday after a practice round. He's been recovering from a wrist surgery for the last month or so. Gave it a go. Wasn't ready to go.
Can't go.
Yeah.
The Phil Mickelson thing is notable because he is the defending champion.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan Shipnuck's book is being launched today.
That's right.
And on top, and on top of it, Alan Shipnuck is there. And so you can imagine Phil Mickelson's looking at that thing going, you know, as much as I'd like to play and defend that title, the Wanamaker Trophy, Vinny,
mm-hmm.
he's probably thinking, I want no part of that. It is unbelievable to think that it was less than 1 year ago today that Phil Mickelson sort of captivated everybody.
One of the best sports stories.
It was a cool story.
In that moment, yeah.
Yeah.
50 years old.
50-year-old dude winning a major while wearing sunglasses.
By the way, Robert McIntyre is your early leader, 2 under through 4. You know who's a one stroke back?
Who?
Your boy John Daly.
My boy. can you hook me up with some golf on television?
I think it's on ESPN Plus until 2 Eastern.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Are you?
ESPN proper.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, we're down to one working TV in the studio.
Oh,
now.
No.
So we'll try to figure it out during the break.
And you know that's reserved to Vinny's favorite.
I was going to say, you're going to have to choose between.
It's on USA Network. I don't even know what the hell this show is. Where's Alyssa Milano?
Where's Charmed at? Is it called Charmed? Is that what it's called? Where's that at?
Yeah. On the Mercury back home tonight, they host the Dallas Wings at 7 o'clock at Footprint Center. And a couple more conference semifinal series got underway in the NHL last night. Carolina Hurricanes went overtime to beat the Rangers 2-1. And the Battle of Alberta got off to a crazy start. Calgary beat Edmonton 9-6. 15 goals in an NHL playoff game.
You don't
game.
See that very often in a playoff game.
No.
That's very different.
No, you don't see that very often at all. There you go. There's your splash for Thursday.
Let's go.
Let's dive
Let's
in,
go.
Shall we?
Let's do this.
I don't know what I'm going to say, but we'll talk. Obviously, James Jones, the general manager of the Suns, he wrapped things up yesterday, and everything appears to be okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata.
Bickley and Murata Mornings.
They played better. They made shots we didn't. Not taking anything away from our players, but they performed better. I thought it was balanced back and forth. Both teams played well at home. We got to game 7, and we just couldn't. We couldn't get it done. They did a lot of good things that teams do. Try to take you away from your strength. Your strengths. They switched pick and roll on Chris. They tried to trap Devin. They forced us to, they forced us out of our comfort zone. And, for half the games we responded, the other half we didn't. But you have to take your hats off to them. They beat us, and they were just a better team.
That's General Manager James Jones of the Phoenix Suns wrapping things up on the 2021-2022 season yesterday that ended in just inexplicable fashion on Sunday. And am I surprised by that answer when James Jones is asked, what the heck happened in Game 7? What happened in that series with Dallas? Does it surprise me that he would immediately go to, hey, they outplayed us? That was clear.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a simple case of one team outplaying another. That was a case of one team dominating another while the team that was being dominated was very complicit in said domination.
Yeah.
It was a unrecognizable performance from a team that had been really solid for most of the year. And for as much as I expect James Jones to make comments like that, the fact of the matter is the fan base doesn't want to hear anything resembling those comments.
No, you're exactly right. And in a lot of ways, this is going to kind of be tough for basketball fans here to get over this until there is some closure. We just dealt with this with the Arizona Cardinals. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But I'll just say this right up front, that if the Suns were locked up against an equal, if they had played a 7-game series against the Warriors and came out and just laid that egg in Game 7 and it was the anomaly of everything that we saw, you could buy that line of thinking that, okay, you know what? What a bad time to have a bad night, but let's turn the page. The problem is it's not that simple. We have multiple reports of things going on behind the scenes, crackling around the edges, on the margins that are so atypical of this basketball team. And they are so unlike the tight-knit chemistry juggernaut that we've seen for 2 years. And everything about the Phoenix Suns in this playoffs did not look right. They just looked off from the get-gate. They had moments, they had quarters, they had halves, they had victories, but they didn't ever feel right. They got pushed around by the Pelicans.
They had great individual performances by players, but not a lot of stretches where the whole team looked like
there was a lot of that. And then there was a lot of the foul hunting that got to the level that it did, to the point where I kept harping on it. I did that because it wasn't that profound in the regular season. So something was burning really hot in that group that was not good. And it's very hard to just hear, okay, we had a great season.
Yeah.
We learned. We took good steps. That's not going to fly. Like I said, at the very start of the show, it's Thursday. That game took place on Sunday night. I'm not done processing it. I am still searching actively for answers.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Then James Jones, after he spoke to the media, he had his weekly visit with Burns and Gambo yesterday. And a lot of the things that you just hit on, that was the subject of one of the questions. Was there a worry about any dissension going on heading into the Mavs series? Here was James Jones on that.
No, I mean, it's competition. You know, when things don't go your way, it's easy to be frustrated, and you can take frustrations for dissension. But, you know, all of our guys want to win. You want to do more. You want to help the team more. And when you don't get the results you want, that's what it can become. But our team, throughout the entire season, you don't become the type of team we were and have the success we had without being a close-knit type group. And that's what we were, and that's what we still are.
Vic, I had asked earlier in the week, was that maybe a mercy killing by the Dallas Mavericks? That maybe, you know, if the Suns found a way to get through Game 7, that they would have been exposed later on and fallen short ultimately. It's one game out of a best-of-seven series, but one of the things I did take away from Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals, and I think you felt the same way in what you watched, I didn't feel like either one of those teams was markedly better than the Phoenix Suns, and I kind of wanted to feel that.
Yeah, that was my hardest thing last night, is I superimposed the Suns team I remember, not the playoff version, but the Suns team I remember from the regular season, and watching that game last night, I was more convinced than ever that the Suns are better than either of those teams.
Yeah. Now, I think the champion is coming out of the East, and mm-hmm. I felt that for a while. But
I do agree with you. I do think there was a profound lack of belief on that court in Game 7, or whatever belief was there was gone very, very quickly. And it probably took a few disjointed offensive possessions for it to happen, and there you go. And that's also the thing, too. It's very hard to just accept James Jones's comments, because there's another big, heavy question out there, and it was exacerbated in our talk with Kevin Arnovitz yesterday, who just said it is so hard now to take anything you see in the regular season as proof of anything.
Yeah, here's what he said yesterday on our show. This is Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN.
Regular seasons are less revealing than they used to be about teams' good qualities, because nobody plays. Let's be honest. No one's out there. I mean, I'm covering a Golden State-Dallas series where, you know, they're talking about some game the Warriors played where Steph didn't get a shot in the fourth quarter against Dallas in Dallas. And I'm like, ooh, that could, I go to look at the tape, like, Draymond's not on the floor. Don't talk to me about that game. It means nothing. So I'm sort of becoming one of these people who believes that 62 wins in the regular season, whatever it is, just isn't what it used to be, because the regular season in the NBA is dumb. It's a stupid regular season.
Yeah, and that makes things even harder to swallow. That means we've been kind of chasing a mirage here in Phoenix all along.
Yeah, dumb regular season.
Yeah, you could have stopped the cut. Yeah, there.
Sorry, I didn't mean to include that, but it was such a good comment, though.
Just want to make sure we heard it again.
Yeah.
But it's so discouraging, to his point. How can you even enjoy the regular season when you know, well, this doesn't mean anything?
And more to
the point, watch it fall apart in 2 weeks.
More to the point, how can you just say, hey, we're just going to run it back because, you know, we had a bad night? How can you say that if this is an issue? If what we all experienced as the best team in the NBA actually wasn't.
Yeah.
Because
by 8 games, but wasn't.
Yeah. Right.
Mirage is a good word.
There's a lot of digging to get out of where we're at.
Yep. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. You kind of led me where I was going too, Bic. It was hard, if you listened to the press conference from James Jones, if you listened to the interview with Burns and Gambo that James Jones conducted, it was hard to not walk away with the feeling like, hey, they're going to try to run this back, aren't they? We'll get into that next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios on this Thursday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
It's a factor, but it's not a cap. You know, for us, that's that's not going to prevent us from continuing to build our team and to keep our team together. That's something that we knew when we started this journey towards winning that we'd have to be willing to do, which is going to the tax. And so that's not a problem for us. We're just going to continue to try to do whatever we can to create the best team possible.
That's James Jones on with Burns and Gambo yesterday talking about the luxury tax,
mm-hmm.
which the Suns will be a taxpayer. That's been acknowledged by the owner, Robert Sarver. It's been acknowledged by James Jones, but hear him say, hey, that won't be a factor in yep. building our team and keeping our team together, which to me are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Suns of the mindset, hey, this mix we had this season, for as good as it was in the regular season, is not built for the playoffs? Would that be an overreaction to, a disappointing playoff run? I don't know. Or do they feel, hey, we need to beef this thing up?
Yeah.
And I kind of got the feeling from everything that I consumed from James Jones yesterday that this team's going to look very similar to what it looked like this year, which, again, I'm confounded by. And I'm not sure why that would be the case after such a disappointing exit.
Right. I think there's a lot to kind of unpack here as well. One of the other things Kevin Arnovitz said yesterday that I took exception with was this idea that, you know, the Suns haven't won anything. So the only time you go that deep in the tax threshold, the tax basement, if you will, is when you're defending a championship, when you know you have enough and you're spending to keep it together. I think that's kind of ludicrous in this instance, because the Suns were up 2-0 on the Bucks in the NBA Finals 2 years ago, and they were the best team in the regular season by a mile. Now, I will entertain this idea of what does that all mean? Is it really something that you can put a lot of stock into? But the idea that it's not the time to go in heavy is absurd to me.
You could argue that for 2.5 years, the Suns had the best stretch of any team in the NBA.
Yes.
Yeah.
The bubble, the entire season last year, to the finals the entire season this year.
And let's also be honest, James Jones at the trade deadline miscalculated, and he did it again this year. And that's 2 years in a row that he's done that. So there are things that he can do better here. There are things he can recognize better here. Because this is not a baby step profession. This is not a two steps forward and eventually we'll get there kind of profession. It's not the way it works. So what do they do now? I was thinking a lot about this yesterday because I know Suns fans, some have kind of speculated that, hey, we could pry LeBron out of Los Angeles. And I've seen memes of Kevin Durant in a Suns jersey. And I keep thinking to myself how gross that would feel if either one of those guys rolled into here next year. And don't get me wrong, if he showed up, I might change my mind. But the idea of being that kind of team, the idea of getting that base in how you're pursuing the championship, I don't know.
I mean, the recent track record of so-called super teams, not exactly great. I mean, look what Brooklyn's floundered since they've gone down that road.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers didn't make the playoffs. And basically had 6 playoff games the mm-hmm. year after winning a title with that whole philosophy. I think at the heart of it, if it came down to that, yeah, it would be a hard pill to swallow. But part of that difficulty in swallowing the pill is just the realization that that might be how you have to win in the NBA, and the Suns have never been that way.
Yeah. Is Kevin Durant even able to extricate himself?
I mean... It would have to be through trade, correct? And there's some people saying, did you see him in the Celtics series? He looked like he was done. I'm not willing to say that Kevin Durant is done.
No.
But and because we talk about this a lot, and not just in the NBA playoffs. We are in the overreaction business. Let me give you a big overarching question on all of this. You said it earlier in the show. It's Thursday. The game was Sunday. Nobody who cares about the Phoenix Suns is done processing what they saw. Still, none of it really makes sense.
No.
But would blowing this team up or changing it significantly, is there a chance that would be an overreaction by James Jones?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there is. I mean, again, this is why we need to know what happened. We need to know what happened so we can evaluate what we really have here and what the heck we just experienced. That's kind of the issue here. And I think about it, and it's like, look, DeAndre Ayton, how old is he?
23.
Okay, and he's crazy goofy, and we all loved it until we didn't. And here we go again with that. He was pretty good this year under some trying circumstances, and it might be at the case now where the Suns won't have much of a choice in this. If DA really has been talking openly about how bad he wants out, then this thing isn't going to be, oh, okay, you matched my restricted free. If a team comes to DeAndre Ayton and wines and dines him and shows him nothing but love and says, dude, we value you. We're putting this money in front of you. We're going to get you the ball. We're going to make you the centerpiece. And then he goes back to Phoenix and the Suns go, okay, we're going to match that. Do you think he's going to be happy to get his money begrudgingly from a team that wouldn't give it to him in the first place, in a system that he doesn't get the ball, in a place where he feels undervalued? If he gets a suitor that puts that in front of him, all that love in front of him, you don't think he's going to want to go?
Well, yeah, human nature says yes, but the NBA is littered in throughout history of players that wanted to be the guy. Sean Marion wanted to be the guy. Joe Johnson wanted to be the guy. Mm-hmm. Antonio McDyess wanted to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
If the money is the same, would you rather be the third option or second option in Phoenix winning 60 games and competing for championships, or boosting your scoring average by 6 to 7 points a game in Detroit and being a lottery team?
If you've been the guy that has been harped on the most here in Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
and the head coach has aligned himself with the point guard who is constantly on you, then, yeah, I don't think it's that simple. I think that mindset you're talking about, I think the Suns just, not squandered, the Suns just got that from DA. I'm going to play this season on your terms because I love this group. DA just gave them what you're describing. He's not giving it to them again.
Until you heard this report, though, didn't DA seem like exactly the type of guy who was fine being the third option?
Yes.
On a good team?
Yes.
Like, he didn't have that personality that he wanted to take over games and be the man.
Yeah, how many times, it's been a countless discussions that we've had. Wow, Suns won, but DeAndre Ayton only had 7 shots. They got to involve him more. Yeah, but it's a two-sided coin. They got to involve him more. But
he's got to be active, and he's got
to
run the floor.
He's the man. He's got to demand the ball.
Yeah, right.
Do you think he really wants to be the man, or do you think he just wants to get paid like it?
I think he wants to feel like he's the man. I don't think he knows the work that it takes to be the man. I'm with Vinny on that. The bottom line is the Phoenix Suns, and what they need a third scorer, and they don't have one right. I mean, a big-time guy who can make shots in the playoffs. And we were hoping Mikal Bridges was going to be that guy. He wasn't that guy. And then Devin Booker, 9 for 31 in Games 6 and 7 after what you did in Game 5, after you ratcheted up the pressure on yourself, that's how you respond? The idea that you need to bring something new in here, it resonates with me. And yet I'm in conflict with it because I really believe in what I've seen in this group and how much we've loved this group.
And I've been critical of Devin Booker for those performances. But moving forward, I have no doubt that Devin Booker uses that as fuel to get better the next time he's in that situation. We talked about it, going into the playoffs last year, everybody was wondering, oh no, Devin Booker in the playoffs, what's this going to look like? How's he going to respond? He responded really well. And he had some legendary games in the playoffs last year. Game 7 is a different animal, and people ask the question, well, Luka's played in Game 7s. Luka's got championship experience in Europe. How's he going to respond? I think we know. How's Devin Booker going to respond? It was still a mystery. He didn't respond well, but every time there's been something put in front of Devin Booker on his list of challenges as an NBA player, he's overcome that challenge.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I think that, does it ease the pain of this one? No.
Yeah. The Devin Booker box is already checked for me. I think he's going to carry some of this game with him. And that's the other thing, too. As much as the Suns want to turn the page and get everybody focusing forward, That was a legacy-affecting performance by Chris Paul and Devin Booker and all of them. They're all going to have to wear that, and they're going to all have to prove that that is not them at some point in the future. That's what Game 7 means in the NBA. You know that. A lot of conclusions are drawn from Game 7s.
Absolutely. It's the epitome of the overreaction business. Fair or not, and some of it is fair.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just a one-game sample for a lot of these guys.
But the NBA has also had a long history, decades and decades and decades, where the greatest players rise to those moments.
Yes.
So it's not just overreaction. It's what the great ones do in the league.
Yeah.
And the Suns could not do that. And they have to look that in the face.
That is undeniable. Coming up next, we will shift our focus to college football, where Nick Saban,
college football,
the head coach of the juggernaut Alabama Crimson Tide, wants your sympathy.
Oh,
we'll tell you about
it
next.
This guy.
Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Marotta.
Bickley and Marotta Mornings,
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
You've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team. Made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right? We didn't buy one player. All right? But I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
That's Nick Saban, the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide, speaking with business leaders last night in Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah.
And pointing it out, he's not the only coach that has singled out Texas A&M for their recruiting classes. Lane Kiffin has also taken shots. It's funny that it's all coming from the SEC.
The story is Nick Saban feels threatened by Texas oil money.
Yes.
That's the story.
And realistically, he probably should. I'm not saying I'm sympathetic to Nick Saban because they're still number two and they'll probably still win a lot more football games than Texas A&M will, but the NCAA and this name, image, and likeness situation that they've created for themselves, I mean, for years and years, it was, we have to fight this, we have to fight this, we have to fight this. And then when they got done fighting it, the floodgates just opened. There's no restrictions at all on how this goes down. And there is a big problem when you mix name, image, and likeness with the looseness of the transfer rules right now in the NCAA. I believe college athletics, especially football, men's basketball, and to an extent women's basketball, they are cannibalizing themselves. The level of interest in a lot of college communities is probably as low as it's been in maybe ever. And I can use Tempe, Arizona as an example.
We're living it, Vinny.
And they have another level of problem that...
Shut up, Jared.
A problem that a lot of other schools aren't dealing with, but they've been affected by it. As recently as February, we talked to a university president and an athletic director who said, we can't play that game.
Right.
And then they realized very quickly, we better start playing that game, and they can't play it to the same extent. It's a total mess.
Well, and I find it to be really, really... something laughable that Nick Saban of all people is whining that he might be losing his grip. Right? Come on, man. Seriously?
Someone find him his fainting couch.
Is he really want people to believe that Alabama hasn't paid players? Now, granted, I do believe there's something that if you're a prime recruit, you're going to school, obviously, because you want to play in the NFL. So the best of the best, they're not looking, they don't care about an $80,000 car per se. They probably already have that. They're looking for NFL money, and so they know going to Alabama is a great on-ramp for them. But to think that Alabama doesn't engage in this is laughable.
Well, Saban said during this meeting with business leaders that Alabama players last season made a total of $3 million, but only 25 players were able to get those NIL opportunities. That's not very shocking to me. If you look at an NFL roster, how many NFL players are getting endorsement contracts from companies? It's not 25 deep.
No.
And they're not playing in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. But
no.
He also claims they do it the right way. What is the right way? I don't know.
Boosters, that when they give money to football programs, they don't want athletes doing commercials for their business. They want access to the program. That's what they want. That's what their payoff is. And they've been providing money to these top flight schools. This NIL money is nothing new for them. It's just legal now.
Yeah, it's just called something different,
it's called something different, and now that everybody can do it without fear of getting caught, it's driving the people at the top crazy.
Well,
like Nick Saban pointed out in this whole thing that, Deion Sanders, they paid a guy $1 million to play at that school.
But it wasn't coming from the university. Deion Sanders is the coach of Jackson State.
Mm-hmm.
They got a high-level recruit to flip from Florida State to Jackson State on National Letter of Intent Day.
Mm-hmm.
And there were rumors that it was a $1.5 million deal that was being bankrolled by Barstool Sports, which is, you know, that's another story altogether.
Uh-huh.
Deion Sanders went on social media last week and said this.
NCAA, you got a little problem. Let me explain. See? But the NILs, which really ain't NIL because there ain't no name, image, and likeness. It's just pay-per-view right now. That's what they doing to the big boys. Little boys, we can't compete with that. But anyway, you got a problem. See, when you start paying athletes like they're professionals, you get athletes acting like they're professionals. And you don't have staffs large enough and equipped enough to handle a young man with money. Let me go deeper. Handle a young man that's making more money than some of the coaches on staff. You got a real problem. So I suggest to you to allow college teams to hire more qualified men, qualified, that could handle these young men that's getting this money.
I mean, that's another issue altogether, but he brings up the first point, I think, is a valid point. These are professional athletes now.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There's no other way to slice it. They're being paid for what they're able to do on a football field or a basketball court or a baseball field or whatever the sporting event happens to be. And Deion Sanders has been they got one of the top recruits in the country to go to Jackson State, where I think it's a mistake, to get one player. Will there be a flood of top recruits going to Jackson State? Well, there's only so much money to go around, so no, they're going to seek their opportunities. Yeah. So this kid will probably cash in on his $1.5 million from Barstool Sports, dominate the competition, and go to the NFL, but I don't think it makes the Jackson State program that much better long-term. It's so murky.
Oh, I love what Deion had to say about just the changing mindset of players too. You think it was hard reaching young kids today with their goldfish-like attention spans? Now make them millionaires as well.
You can't tell me nothing.
Yes.
Nothing.
Noted humble team player.
You're not
Deion
sunning
Sanders.
Me, coach.
Well, that's the funny thing too, Jarrett, is like, you know,
noted
the messenger
humble
here.
Team player Deion Sanders, who never, you know, was above the team. Is you notice how much Deion Sanders sounds like Reverend Brown from Coming to America nowadays in this delivery?
Nick Saban in that meeting with business leaders said he made the claim. Jackson State paid a kid $1.5 million. Again, last night Sanders tweeted, "You best believe I will address the lie Coach Saban told tomorrow. I was awakened by my son that sent me the article saying we paid Travis Hunter $1 million to play at Jackson State. We as a people don't have to pay our people to play with our people." It's going to get tense on the set of those Aflac commercials, I think.
Yeah, listen, I like Deion Sanders and what he's brought, but this is going to make coaching in college football even more difficult for people who don't have the stomach for it and don't have the communities that can afford it. Like you said, we're living it right now. This has led to a further gap between the programs that just never have had any traction in that sport.
But think about what the NIL is doing, that you have the coaches of the smallest schools and literally the coach of the biggest school both complaining about it.
It's true.
You have the Jackson State coach and the Alabama coach both complaining about it.
And the strange thing about it is Deion Sanders is such a high-profile guy. I mean, if it was, and I don't mean this as disrespect, but if it was anybody else from Jackson State making those claims, nobody would listen.
Yeah.
So at least Deion has a chance of maybe getting people to listen. And I'll say this, selfishly, every year about June, Bick, I start jonesing for college football. The magazines start coming out. I'll spend $50 on college football magazines reading everything I can. With what is happening locally with the team that I choose to support and what is happening nationally with transfer portal, the lack of restrictions there, and with NIL opportunities creating a bigger gap between the haves and have-nots, my interest in college football has never been lower in my entire life.
No, I'm right there with you. It's just there. And for me, there's a lot of reasons for that. There is no cohesion. There is no institutional control. College football, when it's great, is like a beautiful like quilt that your grandmother made for you.
Mm-hmm.
And up over here, there's this pattern, then there's this pattern, then there's this pattern. And those regionalities of it all, as long as it was held together, made college football sensational. Now there's just nothing. It's just...
just a smelly old blanket now.
It's just, that's, there you go.
Rags.
Coming up next, we hit the 7 o'clock hour with the big question. One of the big questions the Suns are facing this offseason, the DeAndre Ayton question. We'll tell you what their general manager, James Jones, said about that next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.